Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. People have been asking me where my favorite guest, Charlie Robinson, is, and here he is. Thank you for joining me, Charlie. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for joining me on the radio show on TNT Radio.live last Saturday morning. It was so good. I got a text from my mom telling me, I like this Mel Kay.
Awesome. And I always get such great feedback from our shows. And I always, you know, so many people have told me that they've bought your book and that they do reference it and that it helps them when they're debating other people. Because like I say, the octopus of global, I've been bringing it up on shows all the time. The octopus of global control is like an encyclopedia of whatever you need to know. You're going to find information in there that can lead you to more information.
An encyclopedia of criminality.
Government sanctioned criminality.
Yeah.
Funny this week when he put the government sanctioned media on NPR and then started putting it on other ones, and people are up in arms. And I'm like, well, it is. I mean,
it's true.
You're going to do it to foreign nations.
Right. They get a ton of their, I mean, they do it when you work for RT, you know, they say Russian state sponsored media. It's like, yeah, but I know a few hosts of our RT shows, and I asked them, have you ever had any interference from, you know, the boss or from the Russians? They said, no, we never heard anything. They never tell us to censor anything. So it's funny that they label RT as state Russian state media, but in actuality, there's less authoritarian control over what they say in RT than there is on BBC for sure. In fact, the guy that told me that was working at RT currently and had worked at the BBC and told me how it really worked there. And I said, well, RT, you got any problems? And he says, no, they don't care. Right. We'll just do whatever we need to do.
Well, that's the problem. So let's get into it a little bit. You've been out there talking to people and around, and you are seeing a shift to a certain extent of people kind of seeing that, you know, this, the whole division, divide and conquer, you know, now we're having this giant LGBTQ plus like major push, and then they switch it around and invert it. And then it becomes another movement in the movements to destroy, I feel like, our country from within. So what are you seeing on the front lines from where you are?
Well, it's funny you mentioned, cause I just got done recording a monologue episode of Macroaggressions about the transgender industry and how big it is, you know, and I did it from like a more analytical point of view, less so like making fun of the obvious cartoonish nature of a lot of the stuff, just looking into the stats and the money and where things are. It's a very, it's big business. It's a $2 billion industry right now, just the gender reassignment component of it, scheduled to be a $5 billion industry by the end of this decade. And grow, you know, and the ideology behind it is so disconnected from reality. And I looked at a lot of the statistics concerning, you know, the reality of the situation. Once you transition into a new thing, you can expect unemployment rates of about 25% for you. You can expect a 30% rate of drug addiction and alcoholism. You can expect a 56% chance of contemplating suicide and a 21% chance of actually attempting it. I mean, that's the reality of this situation. So it's not just, let's, you know, transition everybody, it'll be fun, it'll be interesting, and if you don't like it, you can just go back and everything will be normal. No, you are permanently broken, physically broken, psychologically broken. You're also dependent on these drugs. If you're on hormone therapies, you're dependent on them at about $1,200 a month forever.
Right.
You know, so it's a huge moneymaker. And on top of that, you start to think about I think about Yuri Bezmenov. Whenever I think about things like this, I think about the psychological component, the demoralization and destruction of a society from the inside. And if you can convince people that they're born in the wrong body, then you can convince them of anything, really.
Right. Yeah. And it's another thing that I'm sure you hit upon when you were doing this is the money behind it, because I have been looking at Who is manipulating the on the highest level, the corporations, to go all in? And all I keep saying to people is, you know, 2020, summer of the peaceful protest, BLM and all of that. BLM, of course, with Act Blue, ended up raising over $100 billion. And none of that money has gone to the Black community, the middle class, certainly not the impoverished. And most people don't know where any of that money went as it is. And again, I feel like this is the same model. Really, you know, now they're doing that. But the Human Rights Campaign is one of these groups backed by all the same billionaire, you know, elitist globalists behind the scenes. But they have an index where they are going. I guess it's the Corporate Equality Index, which has been going on for quite a while. And it's a machine highly funded, again, by all the same people and the New Venture Fund and Tides and all of them. And basically, they're bullying these corporations into doing this. And then what's happening on the other side is the diversity, equity, inclusion, and all these new hirings and all of that. They're hiring people in the positions of power and marketing, as we saw with the Bud Light lady and all of this, that will go along with it. And they're gaslighting America to think that there's a majority opinion out there and that, you know, you're wrong if you see this as you know, manipulative or as not good for the nation or for or as very divisive, when the truth is it's purposely being done.
Yeah. And I'll give you an idea of the size of this marketplace. The transgender community is 0.7% of America, right? So you're talking about 7 out of 1,000 people are transgendered. And yet we're going to remake society,
right,
and change the way corporations function. You know, I remember in the old days when corporations were there to maximize shareholder value. I remember when boards of directors, their job was to oversee and make sure that the C-level employees were doing what was necessary for the company, because, you know, everybody sitting in that board and everybody running the business, they all have stock, right, and a vested financial interest in making that stock value go up. But now to come in and just undercut your own stock price, to destroy the strategy for your entire company on the basis of trying to pander to 0.7% of the population, or what? What are you going to do? Make them not buy my products anymore? I mean, what are you doing, Bud Light? What is your end game here? Right. You think that you've got more ESG money available to you that you can tap into if you go woke? Well, you're going to need it,
right?
Because your revenue is definitely going to fall off a cliff, because nobody wants to buy this. There are some things and sometimes and some people that maybe want to have this conversation, but then there's other people that just want to watch a basketball game and right, just want to drink a couple beers, and they don't need Black Lives Matter along the baseline of the basketball game.
Right.
And they don't need Dylan Mulvaney on their Bud Light. And they don't need a lecture from the social justice warriors out there telling you that everybody needs to be stunning and brave and support this lunacy. And you speak up and you go, hey, I just don't want anything to do with it. You're a bigot. You're the worst. You trans hate. Stop hating. Trans women are women. They need to be protected. And you're just like, what universe are you in?
Why do I have to agree? You know why? I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah. Not only do I not agree, I don't want to have the conversation, and I certainly don't want to have it while I'm having a beer watching my basketball game. You know, I just want that stuff left out, and yet they're injecting it in. NHL is having, you know, the pride time. You know, I don't know, different teams are wearing warm-up jerseys that have all the pride colors and everything. You know what happened? A lot of like the Russian players just said, we don't support this, we're not doing it. And what did NHL do? They scrapped it.
Right.
But they have one of those woke ladies running their diversity, inclusion, and equity division as well at the NHL. And it's obvious. It's like, again, I have a business degree from a top 25 university, right? I don't know everything about business, but my emphasis was marketing.
Right.
You don't sabotage 92% of your audience to go after the 7 or 8% that's left. You just don't do that. That's dereliction of duty as a marketing department. You know, you're asking for trouble when you do that. When you're trying to sell a product to the masses, you don't piss off your, whether that's Bud Light or Gillette talking about toxic masculinity.
Right.
You guys do sell razors, right? Who do you think buys them? men. You want to criticize men and tell them that their masculinity is toxic, and then you expect them to go buy your products? Oh, I can't believe our stock price went down 75%. Really? What did you think was going to happen? Did you think everyone was going to go, oh, I like being verbally abused by the sponsors? I mean, it's not like I don't have 18 other razor companies I can buy from instead. So guess what happens? Get woke, go broke. Except they've got a back door here, and that's the problem. They've got money available to them if they go woke, because the Biden administration has allocated a ton of cash for this sort of stuff, so they can tap into it. In fact, their major concern is getting cut out of this capital. And it's the same thing for the green industry too, the renewable energy people. There's just money, big piles of money sitting off to the corner. And if you can prove that you're worthy of that because you do the song and dance and you say the right things and you're stunning and brave and Black Lives Matter and all trans rights are human rights and all these buzzwords and everything, if you recite that and have pronouns in your bio, then you get access to this money. But if you don't, if you're still anchored in, you know, reality,
right,
then that money's not available to you.
No.
So it's an unfair playing field. But again, like I said, they're going to need that money because they're not going to be getting it in the form of revenue. I mean, I'm already reading stories on Zero Hedge talking about Bud Light distributors going, nobody's buying. Like, it's just been a few days and there's already problems with sales. And guess what? Anheuser-Busch, you deserve it. You right. deserve everything that you get from this. This isn't an accident. It's not mistakes were made. It's right. This is intentional. And so I have a big problem with it. And I think that we, the people, have a duty and obligation to vote with our dollars and our attention to support sports leagues, brands, whatever that are intellectually and socially aligned with what we believe. And again, we don't believe outrageous, crazy things. Right. We just believe that children shouldn't be sexualized by strangers, you know, and told that they're born in the wrong body, and that we need to cut your genitals off and do reassignment surgery for you in your 11 years old. My daughter's 11. She's in no position to consent to this. They said, well, listen, it's okay if you're 10 years old and you want to consent to this. This is fine. Really? You can't drive till you're 16. You can't buy cigarettes or join the military till you're 18. You can't buy alcohol till you're 21. You can't rent a rental car till you're 25. But you're 10 years old and you can decide to change genders, and that's fine. And anybody that questions that is a bigot. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's getting worse, because the other side of that is that some of these really insane policies that have been put in, especially, you know, they have the now trans bill of rights and all this stuff. But what is happening to parents in that what you're talking about is that I had on a woman, you know, they especially in California, if you don't want your kid to take puberty blockers or don't want them to join the LGBTQ club at school or whatever, you can expect a call or a visit from CPS right now in California. And and the Biden regime and some of these, you know, Newsom and other, all these, you know, real blue governors, they've already implemented that there are counselors. I know Planned Parenthood's in on too, in all schools, K through 12, as many as they can get, public schools, that are telling children, come to me, not your parents. You know, I'm your friend. And what's really scary is I saw some statistics about the children that are transitioning, that are doing that. And a lot of them also happen to be on the autism spectrum. And it's, you know, or were bullied and then told, well, you can join this club. And then, and these are adults that are guiding these kids this way. And again, we have to look back to, you know, when did this start? And you know, I was talking to somebody in the military that was talking about what's going on in the military with this. And they're saying that it's starting at the HR level, at the hiring level. And remember, like we talked about one time, all these degrees that started, you know, 10, 15, when we were still in college, basically, of these things that you're thinking, like, what is anyone going to do with that degree? You know, women's studies, right, or, you know, or whatever. And then now it's like LGBTQ plus studies is an actual degree. Well, that's who's getting hired to then, you know, hire teachers, hire corporate executives, hire da da da. And then it's just building. But I think that there's a significant amount of understanding that this is not organic. And now in your research that you were doing for the piece this morning, There's a lie. It's the same lie that white cops were chasing down black men to kill them during Black Lives Matter, that the black men were under attack. When you looked at the numbers, actually more white people were shot by cops in those situations.
We can't say that.
There's more white people. You know, there's still the number, the 13%, 64% makes a difference in every statistic. But one thing that is not true, and I don't know if you saw this, is that there is a war or a genocide or this abnormal amount of violence towards transgenders. Because when I looked it up, you know, it's funny. I saw the study and then I went to Google it again and it's gone. And what it really was about was of the transgender community, that the people that are dying now, there's a huge suicide rate. But the people that are being murdered are being murdered. Most of them also of the numbers of murders were also prostitutes and street prostitutes, which I don't care if you're gay or straight. It is the most dangerous job you can possibly embark on. And you're putting a life in your hands every time you go outside. If you're a street prostitute, even a high level escort, it's still very dangerous. And you're putting your life, you know, out there for possibility of being murdered anytime you do anything. The other one was domestic violence. So when I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, okay, so the big number of murders of transgenders is prostitutes. Second is domestic violence. I mean, that it's a stranger wasn't even barely registering. So, you know, that's another thing they're saying, because it's that woman that's I can't even say her name because she's just so awful. I thought Jen Psaki was awful, but this current woman. And of course, we knew when she got up there and she said, I'm the first black gay immigrant to be the White House spokeswoman on day one. That's how she introduced herself. Yeah. And everyone in their right mind thought, OK, so now you can never criticize her about anything because it's going to go to that. But she's up there saying there's a war on transgenders. Transgenders are being murdered. They're being hunted down. This is a lie. And it's the same lie that got us in trouble last time.
They lie about everything. You have to lie to keep this story going, because the truth is that there is no transgender genocide. Like you said, these are crimes that are happening. I'm not saying that it's, I'm not advocating for it. And I'm not saying that it's okay. It's most definitely not okay. But you know, here's the thing. Nobody really cared one way or the other about the transgendered community until they started sexualizing kids, until they started drag queens story time. Right. And they started saying, we're going to have all ages drag shows. And then at these bars, and they show, you know, kids show up with their parents, and then it's like rubber dildos and everything. And it's like, this is most definitely not for kids. The idea, I hate to break it to the trans community, but don't flatter yourself. The rest of the world isn't thinking about you. They simply don't care. They're not plotting ways to suppress you. They're not planning murders. They're not doing all this stuff. They don't think about you on a daily basis ever, really. Yeah. They just don't. So this idea that, oh, everybody's out to get us. No. Don't flatter yourself to that level. Nobody even thinks about you, let alone is plotting to do this. But I'll tell you what, there is a plan, and somebody is plotting. Because when Tom DeLay in 2015 went on C-SPAN, he talked about a meeting he had sat through. He was a Republican, I think he was Senate majority leader, minority, one of those. He was talking about a meeting he sat in where they were talking about normalizing 12 perversions, including pedophilia and bestiality.
I remember.
And I'm listening to this, you know, I didn't catch this live or anything. I saw the clip maybe two or three years after the fact. And I'm watching it going, oh, get out of here. That's crazy. Like, you know, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what kind of meetings. Maybe it was just mentioned in passing. I think about that a lot now, because it seems like it is an agenda. I mean, it is an agenda. It's more than seems like, it's measurable. It is an agenda. And I think about what Tom DeLay said, and I wonder what meetings he was sitting in which they were talking about normalizing this stuff, because they're doing it. They're most definitely doing it. And Mel, you mentioned something about the California encouraging children to, you know, not talk to their parents about this, instead to go to Planned Parenthood or go to their, you know, counselors or their teachers. Don't talk to your parents. You know who separates children from their parents? Two groups of people: pedophiles and communists.
Right.
Because communists want you to not have a family unit. They want you to believe that the state is your family. That's why when you listen to promo clips from MSNBC and you hear Joanne Reed or these people talking about, you know, we really want to think about the children. They don't belong to the families. They belong to the entire communities. I mean, they're really all of our children. It's not just the families. That's what communists say, by the way. That's what they say right before they turn you into child soldiers and make you shoot your parents. I'm only half kidding about this, but communists and pedophiles want to drive a wedge between children and their parents for a variety of reasons, often and most likely because they intend to abuse them in a way that the parents would disagree with. Now, be that sexual abuse, ideological abuse, religious abuse, whatever, convincing them that everybody, you know, the cake gender or whatever, all this stuff requires the parents to be far away because they know, inherently they know, that if there was a parent there, they wouldn't be able to talk about the things they want to talk about without getting punched in the face by the dad, you know? Right. So they do that. And again, there's a grooming process, whether you're grooming them to be a commie or a victim of pedophilia. You know, you identify the weaker ones. You identify the ones that don't have a voice, that can't have, maybe they have problems at home. Maybe their parents are, maybe you see this stuff as a teacher and you go, come here. You look like you're having a hard time at home. You know, I'll be that person you can go to. That is treacherous behavior. That's the sort of behavior that gets you, that eventually winds up having a parent show up in your classroom, dragging that teacher out by the neck. You know what I mean? You start sexualizing children and you're going to see a big problem. So this idea that there's a trans genocide out there, oh, I bet they wish there was, because if there really was, there'd be video of it on every nightly news broadcast every day for the rest of our lives, but there's not. So they have to have that liar stand up there in the press briefing room and gaslight the entire audience like she always does, and talking about things that just simply do not exist. And like you said, when you introduce yourself to the world as being a person of color, a LGBT member, an immigrant, you are doing so. First of all, forget what my name is. My name doesn't happen. Normally, you introduce
what happened. Yeah.
Normally, Mel, when you introduce yourself, you say, "Hi, I'm Mel. Hi, right. I'm Charlie." And you start with your name.
Right.
Not them. You know why? Because communists don't give a shit about your name. Right. They only care about you, what ideological boxes you tick. And like you said, all of those things are like a gigantic shield that she can hold up to deflect criticism away from Peter Doocy.
Yeah, exactly. And the crazy part is that what you're saying about communism, it's funny. I always think about Ron Paul when he talks about when they pick an oppressed group and then start trying to put it through legislation to protect that group. That's the biggest lie of all. They're really trying to take away freedom and liberty from the whole. It's never about, you know, we're going to put in new legislation for trans rights, or, you know, we're going to put in new legislation to protect for BLM, you know, or diversity, equity, inclusion, whatever. No, it's about taking more and more for liberty and free, you know, and individual liberty from the masses, and under the guise of we're protecting this small group. And they never care about the small group. What they care about is more regulations, more legislation, more control of the masses.
Yeah. And Ron Paul's still mad about that. I just was with him in Acapulco.
Oh, I know, right?
He's still fired up. He went on two different occasions and two different speeches I watched him give about cultural Marxism.
Right.
And while he was also saying, we also have to disband the CIA, everyone's like, yeah, he still hates the CIA, you know? So it's obvious from somebody that had, who spent two decades inside the American government, he knows what this means. He knows how they do that. Like you said, it's not about protecting anybody. You just... The American government, if they were really concerned with protecting people, there's plenty of people that are actually being discriminated against and being treated, you know, like white men now.
I know, seriously.
We're on the receiving end of it. We get to, you know, all this, you better apologize for your white guilt. It's like, hey, man, I didn't do any of that stuff. I'm not apologizing for anything. You know, this performance art that you want people to go through is embarrassing, and everyone needs to kind of get their act together, whether it's brands that are bowing down to less than 1% of the population, or whether it's people that are saying, you know, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna, apologize for my toxic masculinity or my whiteness or anything. Stop doing that. Like, get off your knees. This is embarrassing for all of us. And look, I'm if someone is being targeted and picked on unfairly, I will stand up for them. Absolutely. And if I thought that the trans community was being targeted unfairly and treated poorly and being marginalized by a bunch of bigots and a bunch of small-minded rednecks, I would stand up for them. But really, that's not the case. In fact, you know, let's be real honest here. A very strong case can be made that the trans community is bringing this on themselves. Okay. Yeah. The gay community does not behave like this. The gay community, I think, is mortified by the behavior of the trans. I'm in no position to speak for the gay community.
I've talked to a bunch that are, they're saying, and these are the ones that really fought, like, you know, the Harvey Milk days and stuff, people in their 60s, 70s. They're like,
this great job they did.
Right.
They for 50 years, they busted their butts. They wanted to be taken seriously. They did. They accomplished amazing things. And now to have it all marginalized by a bunch of lunatics that are all whacked out on drugs.
Right.
Like it's going to be up to the gay community to straighten these people out.
They're being attacked the most, the ones that speak up about it. But you know what? They're used to it and they're stronger. But the truth is that we had a 1964 Civil Rights Act that has been violated again and again. And you know what? You're not allowed to say that it's against white people, but they've put in a lot of these executive orders that I've read on my show multiple times where it excludes white people specifically from business loans, from, you know, hierarchies of different kinds, from farm loans, from, you know, benefits of any kind. You know, it really does, when you read the language, it literally leaves out white people on purpose, right in your face, executive order signed. And it's like, that's against multiple laws in America, but we already dealt with it. You're not, the way to end discrimination is to stop discriminating in general. It's not to turn it around.
Well, I mentioned the NHL and their diversity component too with the jerseys. It's even more than that. As you know, Ron DeSantis put a stop to this. They're holding a job fair in Tampa for the NHL, and they were saying we want minority candidates only, no white, and you know, apply. And DeSantis said, I'm shutting this down. You're not holding this. That's racist. That's not
exactly.
Do you want a world in which there is no racism? Or do you really just want payback?
Right.
Because that's what I feel. It feels like it's payback. It feels like it's revenge. It's not, I want everybody to be free. It's, I want to punish you for a while.
Yeah.
And then maybe everyone will be free. As long as I'm the freest, you know, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others, you know, especially
these. It's so crazy how upside down it's been turned. And again, the percentages in America are showing that, you know, there aren't enough people saying, I'm not playing along, I'm not doing this, this isn't part of, you know, this isn't okay. There's also, while we were growing up, we're the same age. So, you know, everyone I knew that didn't know what to do with their lives became a lawyer. And there's so few lawyers fighting any of this. And I know the big multinational firms, especially the international ones, you know, the ones in DC and New York and LA and whatever, they're in on it, obviously. They're in the elitist globalists. You know, they're all sure. And I have a question about that. But what's crazy is, where are all the lawyers? Because a lot of this stuff is straight up unconstitutional and illegal. And you see very little pushback by lawyers. And I know that they want big bucks, but there should be some heroes out there. I know a lot of people who went to law school, passed the bar, worked a few years in law and said, this is BS. This has nothing to do with freedom or equality or justice or any of that. Well, now you have an opportunity. There's so many cases out there. And a lot of people that have these situations, I have a good friend who worked with a very, very big company that's run by a black billionaire, and they are purging the white executives and everyone knows it. But to go to a lawyer and say, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. They're saying that I said this in a meeting, or I said I'm colorblind, and they're holding that against me and saying that I'm racist because I'm colorblind, because I'm not acknowledging that my underling is a different race. Or, you know, I asked somebody about their hair, and because she has extensions and she happens to be black, that I was being racist and insulting her hair. The complaints against this woman were ludicrous, and she's a vice president of a major corporation and got called into HR, and they were going through all these things, and none of them were racist. They were, it's lawfare. They were finding what they could from what two women that are under her, one that wants her job, both minorities, said, and saying, well, that's racist. And she's like, why is it racist to say I don't look at color? And they're like, you have to look at color. It's racist to not acknowledge it. You know, and that's happening all over corporate America. It's they're purging teachers, cops, you know, all these people based on them being racist. Yeah. But if you look at the charges against them from the corporation or company, they're not doing anything that's racist. It's they're manipulating it.
Well, it's closeted racism.
Well, don't you know?
So, sometimes. You know, it's you can't measure it, right? It's there in turn. You are going to be racist. It's pre-racism, pre-crime.
Exactly. We need a minority report for pre-racism.
It's so, it's a serious topic, but it's so comical. Like, as a writer, you know, I sit there and I just watch this and I just go, God, it is. There's so much info for me to work with here. You know, I don't even know where to start some days. To watch this insanity. Well, listen, you know, if it's all well and good and everybody is equal for the job, you know, race probably shouldn't matter.
Right.
But if the only qualification somebody has to take the job away from somebody else is that they tick a diversity box, be that race or they're in a wheelchair or they've got, you know, one leg or they've got autism or whatever the thing is that right. gets you more brownie points and gets you DEI rated, right. you know, a little bit higher, then what's going to happen is that you're going to see performance drop.
Right.
In these corporations. And at some point they're going to go, you know, maybe we should start hiring people that are actually qualified instead right. of people that are just a diversity hire. We see that. You mentioned what's her name that used to be the Jen Psaki, who used to be the White House spokes devil.
Right.
She was terrible. I mean, she's a horrible human being who has no problem lying to you. 100% better than KJP. You know what I mean? You look at the press secretary now and you go, well, you couldn't have been the best choice. You're clearly a diversity hire. You're unqualified for the job, frankly. Yeah. Yeah. And so we're seeing this over and over and over again. And maybe these corporations and institutions just need to learn the hard way.
Right.
The ones that are driven by money, the ones that are corporations. Now we get into a different situation with regard to the places like the universities, where they're not necessarily trying to generate a profit. If you are a sane, rational person working in a university, you have got to be counting the days until I don't know, your pension kicks in or whatever, because you got to get out. I've talked to Sam Tripoli about this too. I said, when was the last time you did a comedy show in college? He says, I can't. There's no way.
Yeah,
I can never do that. You know, they're just indoctrination camps. And, you know, God forbid you're a professor, you ask somebody to read, I don't know, To Kill a Mockingbird, and it says Negro in there, and you're like, oh, I'm going to get fired because they had to read a book that made them feel all icky inside. Like, these are calculations that actual professors have to make now.
Yeah.
That people have to factor in that they never thought of before. You know, that the snowflake community out there that's so sensitive and looking for a reason to be angry and upset about something. It's like, hey, man, you don't need to get mad at your professor for making you feel all disgusting because you read a bad word. I got books here you can read. You want to get mad about things? Read my books. There's plenty of actual things to be angry about that is happening in the world. Your professor putting on the course syllabus that they want you to read a book, you know, that has words from the early 1900s because that's how they spoke in the early 1900s. Like, this isn't, you're not being aggressed upon. This is embarrassing. You're hysterical. Like, somebody needs to be, you know, like an airplane where they're like, get a hold of yourself. Like, they're all slapping that lady. Like, get a hold of yourself. Like, you feel like you just want to grab somebody and just shake the crap out of them and just say, like, how privileged of a life do you have that your biggest complaint is that somebody misgendered you? Have you looked in the mirror?
Yeah.
You don't exactly look like the gender that you are. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, cut people a break. And by the way, oh, and they use the wrong pronouns on me. I'll give you a little hint. I work in the real estate industry. If I am doing a deal with another agent and that agent has pronouns in the bio, you know what I think? I'm going to ask for even more because I know this person is weak. I know this person will give it to me. And if they ask for something from me, I'm not giving them anything because I'm not going to cave. I know that this person will bow down to peer pressure. It tells me a lot about the person. When I see pronouns in the bio, I go for the throat because I know that I can. And I know that my client would want me to do that. And so, you know, people are going to have to understand that, that their perception, you know, how they are perceived by the outside world is very different now. When you start to bow down to these woke ideologies and you start to do all these things, even if you don't even really believe in it, probably even worse if you don't even really believe in it,
but
you still do it anyway. Talk about losing respect for a wide swath of the business world. I mean, I just have no, and of course, you know, you go on LinkedIn and you see like she, her, they, them, all that stuff.
I can't do it anymore. I mean, that's how bad it is. Yeah. And you know, that's a really important thing you're saying. It's funny. I've been looking for a house in Florida and I asked the realtor, first of all, I didn't know that it's no longer the master bedroom. They can't use the word master bedroom. It's the primary.
Oh, I'm sorry, Missy. We can't use that terminology anymore.
She told us. She said, we now call it the primary bedroom. I mean, for real, this happened. A young girl, 26, she's totally in that world. But then later on, I asked her about the neighborhood, if it was safe, and she said she couldn't tell me. Like that they're not allowed to comment.
There is a term called redlining where you can't say some things like, oh, don't go in that neighborhood. That's the scary neighborhood. But if you're showing a house in a good neighborhood, you definitely say you're in the good neighborhood.
They have really good schools, you know, or
really
good
schools.
But
there's ways to say it without this coming out.
Good.
Well, there's ways that you can say. I mean, there's no barriers to entry when it comes to becoming a real estate agent either, too. So you get a lot of lunatics in that business that'll say crazy things, and so there do have, you know, you have to have some sort of restrictions in there as far as like don't say this and it. But as far as like we're not gonna call it the master bedroom.
Yeah.
Are you saying, did you just fix racism there with this whole thing? Is that what we're doing? Because you know what I see. I wasn't thinking about master bedroom slavery, but I am now. Now that you started calling it the primary bedroom, I'm thinking, why aren't you calling it the master bed? Oh, because of slavery? Now I'm actually thinking about it. So it has the exact opposite effect that they want. But of course, this is cultural Marxism.
Right.
As we know, this is the destroying of society from the inside. This is getting people to believe absurdities, get them focused on busy work that's irrelevant at the expense of actual things that need to be, you know, we're worried about like what, I don't want to misgender somebody. Hey, how about just do your damn job better? You know what I mean? Stop worrying about all of this, about everybody's sensitivities. It's quite a bit, or better yet, get a passport, go to the Middle East,
right?
Go to Egypt.
Yeah.
Go try and pull that nonsense over there.
Yeah. I have no
appetite for it.
Yeah, I just saw RuPaul is announcing that he's going to take his drag show to Russia and the Middle East. And I'm like, oh, good luck with that.
Good luck.
You know, and speaking of that, you know, I want to just jump quickly to, you were lucky enough, you and I both were very, our worldviews were changed by John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. You were lucky enough to get an interview with him about the Chinese economic hitman. And, you know, it's very hard. I had on a guy the other day that really just laid out all the moves that Biden has made since pulling the Keystone Pipeline to now. Every single one of them benefits China. Every single one after the other, after the other, after the other. And you know, that's a big part. Now, there's a debate. You and I both have a vast group of people that we watch or we listen to or we're friends with and we talk to and know. And I see a debate going on out there. So there's a debate where people that were looking at the Great Reset, looking at the World Economic Forum, looking at what you laid out beautifully, the octopus of global control, right? And they're kind of acting like, well, that's, you know, that's the enemy right there. And then there's the other group that's like, no, CCP China is taking over the world. The Belt and Road Initiative is their military initiative, as it is their control, but also the infiltration of our nation, Africa, Australia, da, da, da. What I'm seeing, because I just saw the announcement for the summer Davos will be taking place in CCP China. So the World Economic Forum is about to have an event in June in China And if you read what it's about connecting CCP, all companies in China are owned by the CCP, with World Economic Forum global public-private partner members in business worldwide. So I'm watching this and I'm seeing that the people on the one side, oh, the multipolar world, it'll be better if it's run by China. You know, they're not going to export communism like they were going to import, you know, democracy. And then the other people are like, well, they're going to take down the World Economic Forum. I'm pretty convinced that they're working together. What is your take on that? Because I don't think they're different. And I hear these people like, you know, Putin and Xi and all them are working to dismantle the globalist control. And I'm like, no, they're working to take it over. But what is your take on that?
Well, the Biden administration absolutely positively has to have China if they're going to put their green initiative into play.
Right.
Because China controls... They either control or they process a lot of the minerals they need. Right. Neodymium, which is absolutely necessary for lithium batteries, is only found in China. And even if it were found elsewhere, the only processing facilities are in China. Right. When they pull cobalt out of the ground in Central Africa, the way that they get that to the coastline is on transport that China has built. Infrastructure that China is building and has built, partly built and continues to build that. And then it goes from the port to China for processing. So if the Biden administration and woke Kamala Harris and all of these people are going to put this Green New Deal together where everybody's going to be driving electric cars, then they have to deal with China. But China doesn't have to deal with the United States.
Right.
And the Belt and Road Initiative, you rightly pointed out that it's a military expansion. Right. I'll tell you how one of the ways that it is a military expansion, when they build the ports in these in the various countries, India, Pakistan, Kenya,
Caribbean.
Wherever they're building the ports, they're building them so that they're... First of all, Chinese will be running the ports and will manage who comes in and out as they currently are doing in Pakistan and in the port there. Chinese built it, Chinese run it, Chinese know who goes in, what comes out, and they've also made the ports deep enough to be able to house Chinese ships, military ships. So think of all of these ports along down the eastern seaboard of Asia, Southeast Asia, through Bangladesh and India and all the way around to Africa and then up through Egypt, through the Strait, into the Mediterranean, hitting Israel and Italy and then connecting through rail all the way up to Germany. All of those places where the Chinese build, they're going to have influence. They're going to know what's coming in and what's going out. And that's a huge deal. So again, this idea of a multipolar world, probably not the worst idea to keep a check on the lunatics out of Davos, but I don't think that they are going to, I don't think in the end, it's not good for humanity. Of course, nobody wants China to be in charge of exporting communism everywhere. But I don't know that, I mean, listen, if you listen to Peter Zeihan, he says that China's got, by the end of this decade, China will cease to exist because of their demographics, because of their one child policy that they ran for 40 years is going to create a demographic catastrophe in that country and that they're actually going to start losing population in the next 30 years. So China has he also thinks that the Belt and Road Initiative is money laundering to get money out of China and for the officials. And he might not be wrong about that.
We don't know. That's the problem. That's why we have to talk about it, because we don't know, because we don't have a media, because the media has always been a government controlled media in general. I mean, we're lucky enough that our shows still get out there. I mean, I'm shocked at the people that are still on YouTube. God bless them. I don't know how they're picking and choosing who gets to keep their main, you know, there's people out there like the Glenn Becks of the world and the Daily Caller and all these people that are still on there. And you're like, how is that happening? But a lot of voices got off. But if we don't have these conversations, then people won't know, because I don't think that it's not dangerous. My big question is really, what are we, the people of the United States, offering the rest of the world that gives incentive for them not to cut us off? I mean, we let our country be so gutted from the inside out between Bush, Clinton, Obama, still to this day. Now they're back in there. Basically, I feel like handing America on a platter to whoever is running this, the CCP and Davos together, but certainly not good for America. And like I said this to you a while ago, and now I'm really seeing it again. People are wondering why the American people are doing nothing. There's still, you know, supposedly 300 million of us and about 7,000 of these elitist globalists, you know, oligarchies that are manipulating everything. And yet it still seems the American people are just like, well, this is just another election cycle and we'll come back. What are we offering the rest of the world?
It's a good question. It's not, we're not fighting back. I mean, when we get mad at the wrong people. And when the French get mad, they go to BlackRock.
Right.
When the Dutch get mad, they spray cow manure on the police. You know what I mean? That are trying to break them down. So I think that the Europeans understand that the problem with America is the American government, not necessarily the people per se. But I think they've run out of patience with us. That we're too docile, that we're too willing to just sit down and take it, you know, from these people. They're standing up, they're fighting back, they're doing the things that they need to do. And they look at us and they go, God, I mean, you guys are getting screwed way worse than we are, and you're doing nothing about it.
Right.
And I wonder, you know, I wonder, Mel, how much of that is television and our diet and high fructose corn syrup and the prescription drugs that everybody's on and the SSRIs and everybody, you know, and the distractions, the never ending distractions that we have here in America that keep us away from focusing on what's really happening and what's really important, which is that every single year we lose more and more of our rights.
Right.
Under the dumbest of pretenses too, like things that don't even make sense. We give them up willingly.
Yeah.
We allow them to take them for it. We allow ourselves, not us, not our audiences, but, you know, the general public allows themselves to be manipulated by liars and psychopaths without even bothering to double check their work. And, you know, it's like, how do you look yourself in the mirror and after still watching CNN, like, how do you reconcile that? How do you justify that behavior? I still watch CNN. Oh, because I like Don Lemon. Really?
Yeah.
You do? Well,
you watch Joy Reid, who tells you every night that you're a Christian national terrorist, you know, or white males or the patriarchy every single night. I think, who's watching this woman? It's so insulting. It's humiliating, honestly. It's like some kind of humiliation ritual. You know, it's sad. And it's still like, you know what? It takes you back again. You bring them up a lot. Bezmenov. To the demoralization, dehumanization, all of it. And it's coming from all angles. And now let me ask you, because you're kind of in a unique position. People like you on the left, people like you on the right, the libertarian love you.
People hate me on the left, people hate me on the right.
I know. But what's good is that you have a lot of different people that, you know, kind of give you the straight story when you talk to them one-on-one. And what happened to Donald Trump to me is such a disgrace. I don't care if they want to go after him for something else. You know, fine. But what they chose is just straight up lawfare. It's very embarrassing for our nations. We didn't get a lot of it, but all over the world, they were mocking America about it. I know they're going to try to indict him for insurrection on January 6th, that he caused that and set it up as a conspiracy. I see what's coming down the pike. They're going to try to indict him for some lunatic woman that I once knew when I was a kid in New York City, who was you know, contributor. This did not happen. I've been to that department store enough times to know that the women's and men's sections are separate and they're very small. It's just a lie, but somebody's backing her or herself because she lost a lot of attention. But all of these things are going to come to fruition in the next year. But my problem is that Donald Trump is just a bigger example of how messed up this is, because there are millions upon millions of people, family court to white collar crime to other crime, that have been treated like this by the injustice system. And I really don't think that this hurts Donald Trump. I saw even Fox News is such a disaster. I don't even pay attention to it, but I saw they put out 49% of Americans think Donald Trump should drop out of the 2024 election after the indictment. If you read down this whole article at the very bottom, it says that they pulled 566 people. So, right. You know, now we're at a place where talking about Hunter Biden's laptop before the last election, and then, you know, all the CIA and, you know, the operatives all lied to America, 51 of them, saying that it was Russian disinformation when they knew it wasn't true, was election interference.
Right.
Now we're at a place where, again, we have to, and I hear people, I hope he goes to jail for life. He's a criminal. Da, da, da. We'll prove he's a criminal. You've been investigating him for 6 years. Give me something real, you know, but yeah. Like him or hate him. This to me is a real bad. It's sad because I see a lot of liberals. I really should never go on social media because I can't believe what people are really saying, and they wish him death. And his whole family in jail, all of this. What's your take on what happened there and the bigger picture of that?
So my thoughts just on Donald Trump in general is that from working in the real estate industry and working with and for a bunch of developers are the scummiest people around. They're always in getting sued. They're always doing things they shouldn't do to make a little bit more money. So, you know, by default, he comes out of that industry. So if you're in that industry, you always have fishy ties and everything. But as far as being a president and the things that he did, I have some real complaints with him. Operation Warp Speed is a huge one, you know, and all of that. But he's probably, if we're being honest and we're looking at actual criminality while in the White House, he's probably got the cleanest resume since maybe like Jimmy Carter, you know, he really doesn't done. He didn't murder Anwar al-Awlaki. He didn't drone strike Americans like Obama did. Right. He didn't open and expand multiple war fronts. He didn't do that. You know, so like if you've got something on Donald Trump, go after him. If this is the best that you've got, frankly, you're asking for trouble because we all know how his base is going to support him.
Yes.
But those people that are sort of undecided or maybe in the DeSantis camp, I think you're going to run the risk of turning Donald Trump into a martyr. You're going to make him even more popular. And, you know, if you do that to some people, they'll just sort of, you know, it'll just kind of, you know, they won't really know how to monetize that.
Right.
Donald Trump will know how to monetize that. Donald Trump will know how to take that persecution from all those people and turn it. They were coming for me. They weren't really coming for me, actually. They were coming for you.
Yeah.
But they're trying to get me because they know I'm going to stand up for you. They can't beat me in an election. So they've got to try and get me disqualified from all of these things that he will start saying if he is acquitted on this. And then what? You're going to give him all the momentum in the world. I just, these people, they get so blinded by their hate of Donald Trump. And right. I've said plenty of things about Donald Trump that I don't like about him. Most of it was like, I don't connect with that personality type. I'm the best. I'm the greatest. Everything I do is great. I don't like those people, but it's less about his politics than just personality match for me.
Right.
But again, I do. He is hilarious. He's undoubtedly the funniest president ever. I mean, he is great for television. And, you know, I'll tell you who needs him more than anybody, CNN.
I know.
Because they're about to go out of business. Chris Licht is firing everybody he can find there, and it's still not going to raise this sinking ship. It's going down unless they get Donald Trump. But I'll tell you what, and I secretly hope he becomes, I don't vote for any of these people, but I secretly hope he becomes president. Not because I like him, not because I like his policy, but because two reasons. He makes all the right people insane,
right?
All the media and the other politicians, he makes them insane. And second of all, to watch the loony left, who's already emotionally fragile, completely come unglued, knowing that Donald Trump is going to be their president again for the next 4 years again, and they can't do anything about it. You know, the screaming lady, that times a million. I'm here for that. I'm ready for it. I want it. It'll be tremendous to see. But look, all jokes aside, I want what's best for the country.
Me too.
I want what's best for humanity. I don't think the Biden administration is offering that. I think they have a much different version of reality, what they want. It's inconsistent with logic and reason and being a loving human being. It's I'm not a religious person, but it feels demonic even to me. And yeah. And I don't connect with that. And Donald Trump, for all his flaws, and he's got plenty, he at least stands up and I think acknowledges the general public. You know, yeah. he comes out and I think he connects with with people. He's always been in the public eye.
Oh,
in a way that Joe Biden really has. You know, Trump has fans. Who's a fan of Joe Biden?
Top 5 show on primetime television for 14 years that he was the star of. You know, people have to, you know, really take a step back. What makes me sad is I see what that Jack Smith is doing, the special counsel for the raid at Mar-a-Lago. And I see what they're doing with January 6th special counsel. They're going to keep indicting him straight through if they get away with it. First of all, it's already been election interference to begin with.
Of course.
And they don't care because on their side, and they admit it. But they're putting America through a lot of trauma over and over and over, because every time when they indicted him, I looked at what else is going on, like the new depositions and the new stuff going out on the Epstein case. Meanwhile, Alvin Bragg and Southern District of New York are sitting on the Epstein case and nobody's been charged in a trafficking case that was already, the woman was found guilty. So she has no clients. So again, there's that whole thing. It's like, what are they distracting us from as they put Donald Trump up with the Stormy Daniels? Last thing before we go, we talked about it a little on your show, but I want your take. It's really rough to why I like RFK Jr. A lot. And, you know, obviously I'm on the same side as him on the plandemic and all of that. I've been at events where he's spoken that I've spoken at. So, you know, I think he's a great guy. He's also very embedded in Hollywood. People don't understand his wife is the wife on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And his brother, his first cousin is Arnold Schwarzenegger. So, you know, and Maria Shriver. He's very embedded in that world. He's also, I keep saying that the so-called JFK Democrats are orphans in the Progressive Democrat Party of right now.
Yeah.
So he puts his hat in the ring. Within a day, Jake Tapper calls him a quack and a lunatic. The biographers supposedly for the Kennedys say he's an embarrassment to the family. They're cutting him off. We have Daily Beast wrote a whole hit piece on this guy. So now the left seems to be, there's the DeSantis Trump thing, which is going to go away. I don't even think DeSantis is going to run. But the left that still does feel loyalty to JFK and RFK and that past are watching their own, really. And it's the Saul Alinsky takedown. It's not an honest takedown of, they're going right for the Saul Alinsky attack. His character isn't that easy to attack unless you don't like what he says about vaccines, but still he comes at it with, this is my research. This is what I found. What is your take on RFK's now entering and what that's doing to the left wing media?
Well, the media gets 60% of their ad revenue from the pharmaceutical industry in America. Okay, and only in America and New Zealand are you allowed to advertise for pharmaceuticals on television. So if anyone is sitting around waiting for the big expose on the vaccines and the dangers of them, you're going to be waiting a long time, because there's never going to be an opportunity. You're not going to see Anderson Cooper do a big breakdown on how vaccines are causing autism and the links to all of this and the Vera's court and the flaws with that, and how the pharmaceutical industry is, every single one of the major pharmaceutical industry companies are convicted felons. They've all been found guilty in courts of law, that Pfizer paid the largest criminal fine in the history of the planet Earth. They're not going to talk about any of that because 60% of their ad revenue comes from that industry.
Right.
So of course, they don't even need to get the memo. They already know it implicitly. Destroy anybody that is anti-vax, right? And so RFK Jr. is most definitely anti-vax. Now he'll hedge that by saying, I'm pro-safe vaccine. You know, there is no such thing as a safe vaccine. Sorry, I know what he's doing. I get it. I understand he's got to say that. But get ready for it. Get ready for the character assassination, the attempted character assassination. Because if you actually look into what he's saying about the vaccines, he's correct. Right. He's not just speculating. He's not getting 60% of his revenue from the same industry. He, in fact, is objective in this and is criticizing them rightly. So I would love to see him in a position. I fully recognize that, you know, they don't allow you to that position of president unless you get on board with some unholy agendas. And the question is, what agenda would he support that he probably didn't want to, but felt he had to? I mean, it's not as if he doesn't know what happens to you if you get on the wrong side of this cabal.
Better than anyone.
Watched it. So it doesn't have to go back to JFK either. You know, we've seen what's happened with the kids as well. So this is a, look, in a, it's a little bit of optimism here. I mean, I would support him. I would support him even knowing that he'll have to make a deal with the devil and knowing that he's probably going to have to bow down to the woke Hollywood side if he wants to get those votes, because he's going to be, he's running as a Democrat. But I think he's the most logical of the people out there. I'll say that. And part of it is because I don't think he's driven by money or fame or anything like that. He's had that his whole life. He seems to be a little bit more grounded and sensible. And you know what, Mel, in this world that we're living in right now, I will take whatever I can get. And RFK Jr. seems like the best bet for, which puppet we want to rule over us for the next 4 years.
And actually also he is again, he talks openly about the CIA and his father and his uncle and what he believes happened to them and that they need to be dismantled. He says a lot of the same stuff they did. And, that's also a threat to them as well. I feel like they're going to take him down however they can and try to destroy this man. I don't think it'll work, but it'll work enough to keep him out. My thing is, now that he threw his hat in the ring, I expect Michelle Obama to, but everyone's saying that's not true. I would say, wait a minute. I really, Joel Gilbert's going to be on today and he made a documentary, Michelle 2024. I think that's our biggest, that would be terrible for this nation. And, but again, the left and the progressives and everyone might see that as the champion and the hero. I would much rather see RFK Jr. versus Trump than Michelle Obama versus Trump, but either will be very entertaining. At least we're going to start to have real conversations anyway, because we haven't had one in a very long time on an open scale in America. Charlie Robinson, tell everyone where they can find you. And you have a new radio show too, so tell everyone about that.
I know. Well, the radio show is on TNTRadio.live on Saturday mornings, 10 a.m. Eastern to noon. You were one of my guests last just a couple of days ago. We had a great time. I appreciate that. That goes out in live, live format, but it's also available as a podcast as well on TNT Radio's feed. So you can check that out. Macroaggressions is my podcast. It goes out twice a week, once as a monologue episode, once as an interview. The monologue episode that goes out tomorrow is called American Genocide. Speaking of the vaccine industry, I do a deep dive on that and to what was announced recently. The 1 in 36 children in America are diagnosed with being on the autism spectrum. That is, in my opinion, an American genocide. You can catch that episode wherever podcasts are served in audio format and also in video format over on Rockfin. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggression, and you can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com.
Yeah. Thanks, and I highly recommend Charlie's books to everyone.
Are there on Amazon. Yeah, you can get them there. Or you can come directly to me through the website if you want a digital copy. That's available that way as well. If you want to bypass Amazon, I get that.
Yeah, awesome. To me, that's one of the best books to put together the dots yourself and then to share them with other people. And of course, he didn't write Controlled Demolition of America as a guidebook, but apparently they've reused it.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Charlie Robinson. You're one of the smartest, nicest people out there in the whole space. And I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Mel. Appreciate you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, Patriot pals. So happy that you're looking into gold and silver and protecting your savings for whatever comes ahead. Beverly Hills Precious Metals is our good friend, and we've been working with them for a long time. So you'll be getting a call from them. We'll also follow up here at the Mel Kay Show because we want to make sure that you're taken care of and you're protected. If you have any questions, please let us know. Right now is the time. There's so much information coming. There's so much chaos. We just want all the Patriots out there to be sure that they are protected, they are moving forward, and that we get through the storm together and safe. Whatever may come, just know we, the people of the United States, will prevail. God wins, and protect yourself. And please get in touch with us if you have any questions. So Beverly Hills Precious Metals, they're the best. They'll be in touch. We'll be in touch. You be in touch with us. Let's do this together. Hello, Patriot Pals. I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about our amazing partner, Mel K Superfoods. A lot of people do the food prep programs that they come in, you know, freeze-dried and all of that. This is not that. This is a full serving of fruits and vegetables and protein. It is a way to maintain a healthy diet no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are, no matter what happens in this country, because again, it's very affordable and at the same time, it's very easy to follow, and it is like having a full garden outside your house that you're going and picking fresh fruit and fresh vegetables. Every single day, you have that same nutrients inside your cupboard. You know, prepare now, be ready. A lot of people do prepping stuff. This is an excellent way to prep to make sure that you and your family always have the essential nutrients that you need to live a healthy, full life out there. Please check out Mel K Superfoods. We're loving the program. We'd love for you to join us. Please get in touch with the show if you're having benefits from the Superfoods program at Mel K Superfoods. We'd love to hear from you. Go to MelKSuperfoods.com and join me in supercharging our wellness journey and living our best, healthiest lives ahead.